Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker, and happy Ichi Octo. Today, part of what I will read on this program is my opinion and my opinion only in all the cosmos. And I would like to dedicate the program to Tom Burgess, who made a wonderful drawing of an upraised hand holding a house, a tree, and a fish in its palm, and literally carved in deep black on its inner wrist and lower arm the words, "Save Our River from LNG." And that is what this program is about. LNG, Fool's Gold Rideau. And I'd like to start with a couple of quotes. The first from Margaret Mead. "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful people can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that has." And from Astoria's own Johnny Orr, "Those who sleep on their rights will probably lose them." In 1972, President Richard Nixon declared that the Lower Columbia River was slated to be the light metals capital of the world. And that's a quote. Comparable to the heavy metals Ruhr Valley in Germany. Wall-to-wall aluminum smelters were envisioned for both sides of the Columbia. An outfit named AMAX wanted to be the first built, but its plans, and inevitably the entire grand concept, was foiled by a peaked and persistent groundswell of grassroots opposition. 10 years ago, a threat as ominous and seemingly omnipotent quite suddenly appeared in the form of corporate, liquefied, natural gas incursion into the same area of the Lower Columbia. Four LNG syndicates rushed to construct terminals to receive imports of natural gas. An initial application to lease public property on the Skipanon Peninsula for an LNG terminal was underhanded and secretive, which involved the silent complicity of the Port of Astoria Commission. Apologists said the secrecy was necessary because of competition from three other LNG corporations that wanted a piece of the Lower Columbia. But that was a deceptive argument at its very root. The competition was poised to covertly rush in and gobble up the Lower Columbia while the initial shock was still settling in. A parallel attempt to corrupt the river with LNG at Bradwood Landing, further upriver, failed due to defiant public resistance over an intense period. Two other LNG threats to the river never surfaced. It seems almost deja vu that the only remaining LNG corporation attempting to build on the Columbia River a decade later is the one that started the mess to begin with. Of course, there have been changes. Singular among them, the current scheme to export natural gas rather than import it, which was vigorously denied in the original scheme. In response to having been thwarted by public opinion, which it clandestinely attempted to stifle, and ultimately by local government, which was rearranged by that public will, the smarmily named Oregon LNG conglomerate now connives to overrule invalidation and claims a spurious mandate to sacrifice the common good for corporate profit. The intent is to bypass local regulations and get federal approval. FERC is notorious for being a rubber stamp for energy corporations. Although the main concern is primarily environmental, the entire LNG endeavor has been an egregious example of duplicity, misinformation, and insinuated denial of public process. Instead of being the voice of decision, the people have been intentionally relegated to being mere supplicants to arbitrary decisions that would most likely affect our collective environment for generations, or at least until the anxiously awaited quake tsunami. From the beginning, when LNG was foisted upon us through secrecy and deception, all sorts of crucial issues were skimmed over or negated by port and class of county commissioners, such as public safety and maritime security, impacts on ocean and river travel, effects on fishing and commerce, amounts of environmental contamination and pollution, the wisdom of building huge, volatile terminals on earthquake subduction zones, and the probable large-scale obliteration of fish habitat and protected wetlands, not to mention jeopardizing the estuary and exposing Columbia River culture to great danger and disarrangement simply for corporate profit. Questions about LNG's unstable effects on local communities received evasive answers, as well as blatant disinformation about the possible calamitous consequences that construction and operation of two massive LNG terminals would wreak upon our beautiful, fragile environment that has been the battered victim of numerous earlier eco rapes. A defining moment of the LNG fiasco was when public officials in cahoots with LNG claimed the need for police presence at public meetings because opponents were, quote-unquote, unruly. That certainly sounded like people who were supposed to represent the public were exerting police intimidation to squelch public dissent after denying the public's right to decide. Yet despite the hypocritical cash register politics, a determined public resistance ultimately prevailed through recall of corrupted county commissioners and election of new members who reversed LNG endorsement, which the LNG cabal high-handedly fought and lost in Oregon courts and on appeal after accusing the new commissioners of bias. A sort of Machiavellian catch-22 occurred when the public elected a new county commission to thwart LNG and dump its supporters from the commission. After overturning the prior commission's approval of LNG, the reborn commission was accused by LNG purveyors of bias for carrying out the public will. That duplicitous canard took a while to resolve, but the ruling was ultimately in favor of the unsullied commission. Since then, Oregon LNG has schemed to obstruct local and state environmental regulations after losing elections of pro-LNG candidates who unsuccessfully claimed non-complicity with LNG. Now its pipelines are to be from Canada and perhaps North Dakota. Ironically, the first opportunity to publicly vote on LNG itself defeated a controversial pipeline proposal nearly identical in expropriation of public and private property to that which other pipeline proposals have recently been made, except that the flow is to be reversed from import to export of natural gas. Such is the charade played by so-called Oregon LNG. The testimony being collected by FERC should be sent also to the U.S. Justice Department to determine if criminal acts have been committed in attempting to foist liquefied natural gas import-export terminals on the Lower Columbia River. The sub rosa fabric of conspiracy to force LNG upon us and nullify the principles of public inclusion should be investigated in a court of law, and those who knowingly broke the law should be jailed. Obviously no surprise, and quite in corporate character, that Oregon LNG insists the public has no legitimacy to interfere with its plans for a massive, highly toxic, and disturbingly explosive terminal on public lands. And no surprise that Oregon LNG, hodgepodge of earlier bankruptcies and mergers, attempts to slink around state and local regulations it proved unable to bully into submission. After all, Calpine, Skipanon, Oregon LNG sleaze through the back door with the clandestine acquiescence of the Port Commission and its director, who has long been unmasked for his complicity in the attempt to force LNG down the Columbia's throat, and is Oregon LNG's CEO of the current effort to bypass local jurisdiction with a FERC end run despite public resistance. The notion of liquefied natural gas as an interim energy source between oil and alternative fuels is as short-sighted as every other response to the perceived oil crisis that is crafted to keep profits and control in the ravenous hands of current oil and energy moguls, with the accessory intent to delay research and development of biofuels. Whatever value put to LNG as an interim energy source between oil and alternative energy, the method of sneaking it through the back door with the silent, irresponsible complicity of the Astoria Port Commission with scarce public notice has rendered suspect every claim made by the LNG corporations. The Lower Columbia River is being inundated by fossil fuel energy corporations that threaten to dominate local politics and economics. This upper left edge of the country seems to be among the last fertile sites for corporate America to penetrate, just as it was the final frontier on the continent for Euro-American civilization to expand into. Encroachment by big business into local communities generally includes such iniquities as secret deals, influence peddling, deceptive treatment of a resident populace, nasty intimidations against public opposition, and the corruption of indigenous Quislings. Incursion of corporate cash register politics deeply divides our communities. Whether we like it or not, we are pawns in a ruthless worldwide culture war of resource plunder that pits local communities against mega corporate octopi that are implacably unsympathetic to the concerns of people and places they ravage. 10 years ago, Port of Astoria commissioners secretly smuggled LNG leases past the people, while Clatsop County and Warrenton City commissions played disingenuous peekaboo, waiting to print their stamps of approval on what some of them at least thought to be a done deal. The snide deceit of surreptitiously imposing LNG upon us with only a smug charade of public involvement was from the start abetted by local officials, who appeared to have little respect for their constituencies and, of course, yelled foul when their duplicity was challenged. They not only discredited but betrayed their responsibilities in two areas: their collaboration with the private interests and their bald contempt for the public will. If they did not sell out their public obligations for personal profit, then they must have been politically naive, infallibly inept, or pompously stupid to have been eager accomplices to mega corporate exploitation of our beautiful, rare, and fragile environment. Stripped of its fictions and fanfare, all democracy really does is give ordinary people a few tools to use against perfidious misuse of public office by special interests. And if they are not used, we lose the rights and liberties we do possess. Removal of corrupt, negligible, or stupid public officials is one of those tools. The use of the recall vote is just about the last resort local citizens have to reverse directions of crime or folly. And in this instance, three members of the Clatsop County Commission were removed by recall, which included its chairman. It is worth going back a decade to the beginning to remember how we felt when suddenly confronted with not only the shock and awe of LNG, but also the slippery facade that it was a done deal without anybody having a right to disagree. Peter Hutala wrote an article for Hipfish, which was the first coastal publication to unmask the LNG charade, in its splendid January 2005 issue that also featured several other articles about the LNG sneak attack on the Lower Columbia River. That special issue of Hipfish was the first real critique of LNG written in the local press. And everything Peter warned about LNG in that issue is as true now as it was 10 years ago. The main difference is that we have learned we are not helpless against giant corporations. Peter is a Clatsop County commissioner and was the major focus of the bias accusation by so-called Oregon LNG and was exonerated. And I'm going to read his article now. and it was reprinted for the Marple 2005 issue of the North Coast Times-Eagle. A Ghastly Secret by Peter Hutala. For 3 months, it was a well-kept secret. Few others than the Port of Astoria and selected local officials from Warrenton, Astoria, and Clatsop County, and some of their staff, knew the truth. They kept their lips sealed. A $500 million investment was at stake, with tax revenue a-go-go. And what's more, family wage jobs. It was better to keep quiet, lest the not-in-our-backyard folks muck up a good thing. The cryogenic gold rush was heading for the Skipanon Peninsula. 3 days after the 2004 presidential election, the Port of Astoria convened a special meeting and granted a 60-year lease for 96 acres of the Skipanon Peninsula to a limited liability corporation, at the time Skipanon LLC, set up by an energy company called Calpine for the purpose of bringing in mass quantities of supercooled liquefied natural gas, LNG. Earlier in 2004, Calpine Corporation had withdrawn plans to build a similar LNG terminal near Eureka, California. Fierce local opposition from fishermen, downtown business owners, and conservationists forced the project to be shelved. Not so in Clatsop County, Oregon. Sure, there is community opposition now that the citizens know about Calpine's proposal. But that lease got signed a full 2 days after the Port of Astoria let the press know that a lease was under consideration. Calpine had control of the property. In this cryogenic gold rush, as in any other, control of property is essential if the riches are to be tapped. Calpine staked their claim to the Skipanon Peninsula. At least three other competitors are working to secure the viable LNG importing sites in the lower Columbia River. Calpine knows that only one such facility, at most, might be granted by permits by the Federal Regulatory Commission, FERC. The port chose not to wait for a regularly scheduled meeting to address the LNG issue and didn't take the time to first fully inform the public as to the possible consequences of their action. As a result, many local citizens were outraged. When the port and Calpine held meetings after the lease decision was made, the outcry at backroom politics, cozying up to big bucks, almost overshadowed the trepidation over the dangers of the project. The process to this point, even more than Calpine's project, has divided the community. Peter Guerin, executive director of the Port of Astoria, defended the port's handling of the situation in a letter to the Daily Astorian, saying, quote, "In making its decision to follow normal and legal public process, not more, to lease the site to Calpine, the commissioners did so with an understanding that site control was the mechanism by which Calpine could assess the feasibility of the site and that many different permits must be filed and approved by a variety of public agencies, each with their own input process opportunities," unquote. And that was Peter Guerin. Big projects like this require numerous approvals at the local, state, and federal levels, right? Wrong. The FERC insists that the federal government has sole siting authority over LNG import terminals. This doctrine of federal preemption is being challenged in court by the state of California. But right now, according to the Bush administration, Oregon, let alone Clatsop County or Warrenton, has zero control over whether Skipanon LLC is allowed to build its LNG receiving station. If Calpine applies to Oregon's Facility Siting Council and Oregon disagrees with the FERC, the feds win, period. Recently, dozens of proposals for LNG plants have surfaced nationwide. Coastal areas of lower population in particular are being targeted, partly because Congress has clearly stated a preference that these facilities be sited, quote-unquote, remotely. Another motive for choosing small towns was offered by Mayor Ed Lampert of Fall River, Massachusetts, a city where LNG import is muscling in despite local opposition. Mayor Lampert said, "I think it's no accident that the industry has chosen places like Fall River, which tend to be lower income, working class communities where they don't expect educated local opposition." And that was Ed Lampert. Remote siting sure sounds good to me after reading the December 2004 report by Sandia National Laboratories that depicts possible, though not likely, events that could cause LNG to spill from a tanker, which would then boil and ignite, melting steel a half mile away and burning buildings and people more than a mile distant. And then there are the suffocating gas vapor clouds that could drift much further until they burst into a dramatic inferno. But barring an unusual accident, sabotage, or terrorism, what might it be like living with an LNG terminal in our midst? Why might the Port of Astoria have considered a more extensive public process, or even some preservation of local control, before capitulating to Calpine's insistence that they must have control of the property? Well, there is this matter of exclusion zones, otherwise known as safety or security zones. These zones are designed to keep terrorists, crazy people, sloppy boaters, and idiots away from the LNG tankers and storage tanks. As they near the LNG facility near Kenai, Alaska, vessels must give the LNG tankers 1,000 yards clearance. When LNG tankers roll toward Boston Harbor, all maritime traffic is cleared for 2 miles ahead and 1,000 yards to the side. The bridge is closed and aircraft are barred from the vicinity. 1,000 yards. It seems like a considerable distance until you start to think about steel melting at half a mile or flesh frying twice that far. Heck, at 4 miles, if you believe some studies. There is no reason to believe that a 1,000-yard clearance from these terrorist targets would not be required by Homeland Security, and plenty of reasons why the space between these behemoths, 900 to 1,200 feet long, LNG tankers and other ships, pleasure craft, and fishing vessels should not be considerably farther. Commercial fishing, shipping, and enjoyment of the wonders of the mouth of the Columbia River would have to wait. Actually, some would have to flee, as LNG tankers and their armada of gunboats take the river. Escorts of up to half a dozen Coast Guard vessels accompany LNG tankers approaching other ports, along with two or three powerful tugs. At least four times a week, the Columbia River entrance channel would be closed, along with much of the lower river fishing and crabbing ground. Homeland Security could also prohibit access to Warrenton Harbor while tankers are at the dock. Well, there is one bit of adjustment we would have to make: subjugating all commercial and recreational maritime traffic on the river in deference to the LNG gold. Calpine Corporation has not yet fully disclosed the pollution that would accompany their 50 to 75 job-producing enterprise. What Calpine suggests is to build a gas-fired power plant to warm up the LNG even as it produces electricity. This plant and its associated activities would be the largest single source of air pollution in Clatsop County. Much of the pollution generated by this plant would severely harm our most vulnerable people, the very young and the elderly. We could expect, based on similar proposals, that 100,000 pounds of nitrogen oxides, which form corrosive nitrate acid when combined with water, would be released from the plant each year. 20,000 pounds of volatile organic compounds, VOCs, such as cancer-causing benzene, would be dumped into the air, along with 64,000 pounds of tiny and potentially toxic particulates called PM10. Huge amounts more air pollution would come from the 100 tons of fuel per day the LNG tankers burn while in port, as well as diesel exhaust fueled by support craft. Okay, that is another change in lifestyle that we might not get to choose: inhaling toxic fumes that cause asthma and cancer. Unfortunately, I can't help but imagine the easy transition from the government secrecy we have already observed to government oppression in the name of security. As with the periodic shipments of LNG to the Boston area, there is no reason to believe that armed guards will not line the shores of our communities as the LNG tankers come and go. The Sandia National Laboratories report enhanced security measures as the primary means to reduce the chances of an intentional LNG spill and fire. What do you think? Would this police state security encourage desirable tourism and clean, safe business and industry? Aside from effectively abdicating local control over public safety surrounding LNG, the Port of Astoria Commission left at least three areas of local concern to the whim of the federal government. Traditional maritime traffic, whether for business or pleasure, would need to defer to petrochemical transport. The air quality of our area would be substantially degraded and the health of many of our citizens sacrificed. And three, our freedom to visit the waterfronts of the region would be tempered by the presence of security forces with automatic weapons. There are local issues that concern the quality of our life and the future of economic activity we want to encourage. No federal agency should make these decisions on our behalf. It is up to us to insist that those we have elected, including the Port of Astoria commissioners, take a powerful stand to defend our values. Our leaders must forthrightly acknowledge that shutting the public out of the process before leasing public property for a dangerous and outrageously controversial enterprise was a ghastly mistake. And that was Peter Hutila in his article in HipFish, January 2005, at the very beginning of the LNG fiasco, and he titled it A Ghastly Secret. And unless the 60-day extension into early December requested by Oregon Senators Wyden and Merkley and Congresswoman Bonamici is granted, the current deadline for registering your opinion with FERC about LNG terminals on the Columbia River is October 9th. You might as well let the D.C. bureau clerics know what you think, because you'll probably wish you had later. I'd like to finish off the program with a poem I read actually a couple of weeks ago, and it's by Carolyn Dunn, and it's called Liquefied Natural Gas. Any tanker that will carry LNG will be tossed hard by the notorious conflicting waters at our river's mouth, or, surviving those, could become the target for some zealot just now born, who years from now will climb aboard this floating hearse, turn a valve handle, light a match, one of several stuck in his boot just to make sure, and start the conflagration that will make the diners at the river's edge and the tourists buying small town trinkets and the lawyer attending a port commission meeting and the dentist deadening an open mouth and the parking meter employee chalking a tire and the woman walking into City Hall to pay her water bill and the dog barking at a scrabble of crows in its yard and the plumber cleaning the U-pipe under a sink and the student nurse performing her first catheterization and the kid walking his skateboard to the other side of the hill and the grandparent counting out cash for a grandchild's birthday present and the man using his cell phone while walking down the sidewalk and a shopkeeper putting a back soon sign on the door of the shop and the 15 girls and boys clapping their hands in the nursery school all stop at once in unison, so to speak, under the superheated blast that was sparked by the match and now travels the path of the wind off our ocean, so that moments afterwards the obsidian black of a town melt will be what our roads lead to and all those mentioned and not mentioned a swift ash within a blinding monument of flame. And that was by Carolyn Dunn, Liquefied Natural Gas, which I said I read a couple of weeks back, but it seems as just as appropriate here as it did then. Carolyn died of ALS a couple of years ago. And this has been Michael McCusker.